Yeah, well, I start the course with basically helping people understand their brand standards. So, as an entrepreneur, one of the first things that we start to learn is that you need to focus and you need to niche down and you need to know who your target customer is. And there are way too many apparel brands out there just not doing that work. And then we start getting into really the numbers of apparel, and I try to break it down in a way that's really easy to understand. But we go into like business line planning, like how do you plan for costing? Are you looking at your margin percentages properly? We do a process called SKU rationalization, where you basically look at every single item in your product line and decide, like, does it have a rational, logical explanation for being there? Does it cost the right amount? Am I selling it for the right amount? Do my customers love it? And if you're not checking those boxes and it's not sitting in that top 20% of your revenue drivers, how do you qualify it to be in your line anymore?
Welcome to Life After Corporate, your ultimate guide for making the leap from corporate leader to entrepreneur. I'm Deb Boulanger, entrepreneur, executive leader, and founder of the Launch Lab for Women Entrepreneurs. This is your time to break through the glass ceiling once and for all and get your ticket to the C-suite. Come back each week to get the leading strategies, advice, and tools that will give you the skills and confidence you need to replace your corporate paycheck. Are you ready? Let's go. Welcome to another episode of Life After Corporate, my friends. And if you're new to our show, welcome home. This is where you get amazing advice, incredible interviews with powerful women entrepreneurs who have paved the path before you. And today we're talking to Rachel Erickson, who's the owner and CEO of Unmarked Street. And we're talking about the power of the referral network when you first get started. And Rachel, as I mentioned, is the CEO and founder of Unmarked Street, which is a performance apparel consulting agency based out of Santa Cruz, California. And with her 20-year background in corporate apparel, she is now bringing expertise to fitting garments in motion and growing apparel brands sustainably to a variety of companies across the industry. So welcome to Life After Corporate, Rachel.
Thank you so much. I think that's like twofold. Life After Corporate, I'm still welcoming myself to that too. So that's great.
Yeah, well, welcome. Welcome to this new life. It's pretty amazing and magical, isn't it?
Oh my gosh, yes, it's amazing. I love it.
Yeah, so Rachel and I met through a network that we both belong to, and this is really apropos to our conversation today, because the success that you have, especially in the early stages of your business, very much relies on the rooms that you show up in.
Yeah.
So Rachel, I know you had an incredible startup story. So let's talk about your life after corporate and how you made the decision to leave corporate and what your first year in business was like.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I hopped around a lot, actually, in my corporate roles, and I had several different jobs throughout my almost 20-year career in corporate. And at the time, you know, especially when you're inside those corporate walls, you kind of feel like, oh my gosh, am I hopping jobs too much? Am I going too many different places? And when I left corporate in 2021, that wide network that I had been able to build by having so many different roles and kind of working at so many different companies was the 100% catalyst to having any success in my first year, because I was really able to tap into so many different people. I was reaching out to everybody I knew, asking if they had any connections for me or if they had any work for me. And without that, I don't know how I would have gotten started.
Yeah. So what this tells me is that you've always been an entrepreneur, that you had the intrapreneurial spirit. And I think this is one of the keys to look at in your past corporate life is, were you always motivated by solving new problems or the creative aspect of jumping into a new situation? That's the intrapreneurial spirit, where you get to cultivate the entrepreneurial gene inside a really safe environment. So have you ever thought of it that way?
I never have, but I love that. And I very much resonate with that. I think I was always a very ambitious and tenacious person inside corporate, always looking for that next promotion or looking for new ways to learn. So I would go like shadow just a different department just to see what they were doing for the week, or so that I could learn a little bit more about their jobs so that I could be better at mine. And yeah, I think that definitely came through in becoming an entrepreneur eventually.
So it sounds like you had a pretty good, why would you ever want to leave?
It did start out good. I love fashion and I love the apparel industry. It is such a fun place to work. But I think the journey that I ended up taking over that 20 years was from a wonderfully like smiley, naive young woman into kind of learning what the real world is like a little bit. And through the different companies that I worked at, kind of understanding that a lot of us end up taking on more than we can chew. And in my last role at corporate, I was probably handling at least 4 different people's jobs. I was just so burnt out. And I think it was the summer of 2021 when everyone started noticing that my clothes were fitting really loose. I was losing weight like crazy. Like I couldn't eat. I was so stressed out. And I think that was really the signal to me to like, there has to be something else. I need to go do something different. And so that burnout really resulted in a physical aspect for me. Mm-hmm. And I knew I needed to make a big change. And so my husband and I talked for a really long time about what that looked like, because it was going to be a big risk for us, a big change for us.
Yeah.
And in October, I was able to kind of leave and start my own thing. But we kind of had a deal. It was like, you know, if this doesn't look like it's going to be good within the first 6 months, or you can't get any work, we need to discuss what that looks like again, because we need to be able to, you know, afford our home and the lives that we live. So luckily,
no pressure.
Right. Yeah. No pressure. Make this work.
For 6 months. I mean, there are people out there who are going, oh my God, you know, who've been in it for a year and are still not making substantial revenue. And that pressure of, oh, this has got to work in the first 6 months. And your husband is there. And I'm sure he's a great guy, but this is what spouses do. It's like their nails are on the countertop,
yes,
saying, okay, how much longer are we going to give this a shot? You know, what is our plan here? So what did happen? I'm so curious.
Yeah, I mean, he was incredibly supportive, but he did push me in a lot of those ways. You know, I have this story, like I didn't want to even put together a business plan, which was so silly. But, you know, he made me put together a business plan and work with the right people to get to that point. And we did kind of put this timeline on things. But I also think it put a fire under me to make sure that I was getting the kind of work that I knew I needed to get and making some money. And what it actually ended up doing was catapulting me, because I got so much work in that first 6 months that I ended up having to actually hire a couple of people to help me complete the work. And all of a sudden we became a consulting agency and I was no longer just a solo freelancer. And that's kind of where we stand today too. And I'm building on top of that now as I go.
Congratulations. And
thank
I understand
you.
your first year in business was a multi six-figure year. So that is a rarity in the entrepreneurial world. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Tremendous success. And what has that done for you from a mindset perspective? Like, as you look back, how long has it been since you left corporate?
It's really only been 2.5 years, not even 2.5 years. It was 2 years in October.
Okay.
So a little over 2 years.
So how have you changed? You know, how are you changed as an individual, as a person, you know, your confidence, your beliefs 2 years out? And were you able to sustain that level of growth?
You know, when I look back at the type of person that I was, especially in my last couple years at corporate, being so stressed and so burnt out and working with teams that maybe weren't the most supportive, I recognize how different I am today. And I think understanding my true core values was something that, as a new entrepreneur, I was really encouraged to explore. And I really learned that, like, when I do all of those strengths assessments and things like that, like love and kindness for me is number one. And I don't think I was doing that very well at corporate. And so being able to kind of embody that and bring that into my new work and bring that into my new life has been huge. I think there's a lot of work that you do as an entrepreneur, just personally exploring yourself and exploring what you're capable of. We have not been able to maintain the same growth that we saw over 2022. The apparel industry had a really tough year in 2023. A lot of the biggest brands in our industry did layoffs. We've seen a lot of people lose jobs. We've seen a lot of companies close down. We've seen a lot of consultants and freelancers have to leave and go back to corporate. And so I'm just really proud that we're still standing. And we did hit six figures this year, but we didn't hit as big as we did in 2022. And so we're figuring out how to pivot and change that for 2024. But I've learned so much in 2 years. And I would say I'm a pretty different person now.
Yeah. So, you know, loving kindness and our listeners know, I always say entrepreneurship is a spiritual journey where it forces you to really step into becoming who you really are at the core and let go of some of the shaping that has happened, especially for women, just culturally and in the corporate world. You know, the fact that you were doing the work of four people, of course you were, because, you know, women are like, I'll do it. I'll take it on.
Yep.
And, you know, we don't ask for help when we need it. We don't ask for a lot of money when we should, you know, all of those things. So the fact that you've navigated what really was a tumultuous year for the retail apparel industry, because it was a scary year for consumers.
Yeah.
And whenever we're in this time of uncertainty and there's economic uncertainty and there's a lot of fear and, you know, next year is going to be an election year and there's going to be a lot of uncertainty around that. So I'm just really curious what your plans are for the coming year of how to navigate this uncertainty and what do you plan to do differently?
Yeah, we're changing the game a little bit for 2024. So we have been 100% based on done for you work. So our consulting agency kind of walks into companies of any size. We work with startups all the way up to big corporate companies. And we do development and technical design work for you. So we either take work off your plate, or if you don't have these people in your company, we fill those roles. In 2024, we are going to move and add a big education suite into what we're doing at Unmarked Street. And we're going to be opening up thebusinessofapparel.com. And the Business of Apparel is going to teach essentially what happens inside those big corporate walls, because nobody really knows. And unless you've spent decades or at least years inside a corporate company, nobody's really giving you that information, and it's really difficult to find. So I'm really excited to be sharing the information that I know so that the companies and the people who need it most can finally get that kind of information. And so I'm really excited to be adding that in 2024, but it is a huge pivot for us to be kind of setting up all of these different online courses and getting ready for what all of that looks like. So that's been happening throughout 2023. And it's just going to be my honor, I think. I loved being a manager when I was in corporate and teaching people what I knew and getting them to a place where they wanted to be in their careers. And so I'm really excited to get back to that through this course.
That's so exciting. It's almost like you're creating a new category called design tech. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the technology behind design. And for some reason, there are so many women that I've been introduced to in my various circles. And I don't spend a lot of time with product entrepreneurs, but I meet a lot of them. And athleisure wear is something that a lot of people gravitate toward.
Yeah.
And I'm always saddened when they underestimate all of the things, not just the manufacturing of the goods and the merchandising and the selling and all of that, but, you know, profitability and making a business and getting distribution channels. So what part of this is, and remind me of the name of the program because it sounded so good.
Yeah, it's going to be called The Business of Apparel.
The Business of Apparel. I love that. Yeah. So what is that going to cover? What are some of the things that you feel apparel entrepreneurs are missing when they get started?
Yeah, well, I start the course with basically helping people understand their brand standards. So as an entrepreneur, one of the first things that we start to learn is that you need to focus and you need to niche down and you need to know who your target customer is. And there are way too many apparel brands out there just not doing that work. You know, they're trying to make a piece of apparel for everybody on the planet. And at the end of the day, when you make something for everybody, you end up making something for nobody.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of the beginning of the course is trying to teach that from an apparel perspective. And then we start getting into really the numbers of apparel. And I try to break it down in a way that's really easy to understand, But we go into like business line planning. Like, how do you plan for costing? Are you looking at your margin percentages properly? We do a process called SKU rationalization, where you basically look at every single item in your product line and decide, like, does it have a rational, logical explanation for being there? Does it cost the right amount? Am I selling it for the right amount? Do my customers love it? And if you're not checking those boxes and it's not sitting in that top 20% of your revenue drivers, how do you qualify it to be in your line anymore? And so there are some processes like that, that the biggest, like billion dollar, like I'm talking like Nike, Adidas, Under Armour, they're doing these processes on a regular basis, but not many others are. And so I really want to get that information out and teach people how to do it, because it changes everything for your business to the point where you no longer need to worry about investors or loans. The profitability of your own company feeds what you're doing as you go. And that's, to me, just such a beautiful way of running a business.
So beautiful. And I see so many entrepreneurs, you know, focus on the investor dollars right off the bat and spending all your time focusing on getting funding or getting investment, and at the sacrifice of wasting time, wasting money, and not getting your product to market. And what I love about what you just said, you know, we're sisters in two different categories. I'm playing in the services space, playing in the product space, but testing, market research.
Yep.
You know, what is it that people are buying? And, you know, what category do you want to own, or at least have a majority share, or at least a share that you can sustain yourself?
Exactly.
And you know, I love clothing. I love apparel, and the insane prices that are going on out there right now, you know, $400 for a blouse.
Yeah.
It's really insane. So I won't go down that tangent, because I'm curious, like, what's driving up price of all these things that I love to buy? Even, you know, like yoga wear, it's $200. I'm like, give me a break.
Yes. Yeah.
It's great. And so, you know, what are some of the things around pricing? Is that an area that you get into with your teaching as well?
Yeah.
What are some of the areas around pricing that you see many product entrepreneurs, apparel entrepreneurs get wrong?
You know, it's really interesting. I'm going to counterpoint you a little bit. When I see a lot of startups starting their own brands, one thing that I have seen quite a bit is them underpricing their product.
Yes.
To the point where they think nobody will buy my product if it costs a certain amount of money. And I think they're doing a disservice to themselves as a startup by underpricing their product. There's a couple of like psychology things there when people go to shop, and the ability to buy something that isn't cheap and is a quality product and something that you know you can keep in your closet for many years because maybe it costs a little bit more, but it also lasts really long, is there's a psychology aspect to that of what they perceive they're getting for the value of their dollar. And I think undervaluing your product actually undervalues your company, and it undervalues your product if you're making really good product. I do think there's a flip side, of course, to that, where a lot of the bigger brands are overpricing things and they're seeing inflation go up. And so the cost of the fabrics and the threads and the buttons and all of that good stuff is going up. And instead of absorbing it themselves, a lot of these bigger brands are probably passing it on to their customers and trying to hold like really high margin percentages within their company. And at the end of the day, I will say, coming from corporate like that, you know, if you're not hitting your numbers and you're not putting out that margin percentage that perhaps a head of a department or a CEO, you know, gives to you as a goal for the year, a lot of people don't walk away with a raise for next year or their yearly bonus. And so sometimes this is a way for them to protect their teams and make sure that they don't see turnover in years ahead. And then there are, you know, the high fashion brands that sell everything for thousands of dollars, and that's all about marketing and naming. But
yeah. Well, it's so funny because it's common too for service entrepreneurs. I see the same thing of underpricing their services because they undervalue themselves. I even said in a training a couple of weeks ago, no one's purchasing your self-worth. And so it sounds like that same issue translates into pricing of apparel. But it's true. And especially in an economic downturn, your or just even an uncertain economy, the people who are less affected by that are more affluent buyers. So higher quality fabrics, you know, a brand that has just some cachet to it, even though I might not purchase all the brands, I love looking through those catalogs and luxurious fabrics. And I think you're doing yourself a disservice if you're not charging appropriately for the product that you're creating.
Yeah.
It's a going out of business strategy eventually because it's simply not sustainable.
Yeah.
So what advice do you have for apparel entrepreneurs who are just getting started? Like, how do they get clear on the pricing? It sounds like the research, you know, not doing the right research up front.
Yeah, the research is huge. I think understanding your target consumer is a big part of it and knowing what they'd be willing to spend. At the same time, you know, I think consumers always want things to be cheaper than they really are or what they really cost. But understanding their economic, like I have in module one of the course that's coming out, we have an entire exercise where we basically create this life story of your target customer. So you know exactly how much money they're making, what they would want to spend on something in your apparel line. And then the other big thing really ends up being margin percentages. Like there are healthy margin percentages that you want to make on a product and there are unhealthy margins. And if you want to put all of the bells and whistles on a jacket and sell it to a customer, if you're not hitting margin percentages because it costs you so much to make it and you can't sell it for that much, at the end of the day, just like you said, you're not making any money off of that product, and you're just going to spin your wheels over and over again trying to do something like that. And so we go really deep into margin percentages of what's good and what's bad and how to kind of adjust those and get them to a good place. But those are the two big key things, I think.
Yeah. What is a good margin percentage? I'm just curious.
Yeah. So if you're selling direct to consumer, like if you have a website and you're selling direct to them, so every dollar that you actually make off of that goes into your own bank, you probably want to be seeing at least 65% margin. It's going to be pretty healthy for you to help propel your company forward. We also talk a lot about wholesale business, though, in the course, because a lot of apparel brands will choose to work with a department store like a Macy's. Like a Macy's is a wholesale account. The brands sell to them and then Macy's sells to you. In the sports space, we talk a lot about specialty bike shops and run shops. And there, you want to be trying to hit 50%. So if you're at a 50% margin and then your wholesaler is at a 50% margin, that is like the ideal scenario for that.
Cool. Very interesting. What are some of the other mistakes that you see new entrepreneurs make when they're entering the apparel space? What are, say, the top three challenges that they don't even see when they first get started?
Number one, for sure, to me is timing. Mm-hmm. I have had so many people call me and say, you know, I want to launch this apparel line in 3 or 4 months. And I say, well, let's tack 5 or 6 months to that and then we can talk. It's not, I think there's a misconception that you can make apparel very quickly. And what I like to try to explain to people is that's more of a merchandising angle. Like you can go out and purchase t-shirts and do screen printing, or there's a lot of drop shipping options out there right now. And you could probably get something up and running pretty quickly if you're doing one of those scenarios. But if you are truly developing a product from scratch, like you're designing it on paper and then you're working with a manufacturer, I have not seen it really take off any faster than 9 months. And so that's from we're kicking off this project today to you have product in hand. The fastest I really recommend is 9 months. So if you're looking to launch in spring of 2024, you've probably missed the boat, but we could probably get you in for fall 24. And that's, I think, the biggest thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think other issues that we tend to see are in the way of overproducing. There's a lot of misconception out there. Like even if you Google, how do I grow my apparel business? It will say, well, make more product. And that's not necessarily the right information. Having the right amount of product that your customer really wants is really tricky to do. But that's the smarter way to move forward other than just adding more products every single year. And then I think on top of that, in kind of the same vein, I do see a lot of startups just continuing to add inventory season after season when they haven't already sold through what they have or gotten close to selling through. And so they're spending money on product they don't need quite yet. And it's really hurting their books at the end of the day or at the end of the year. And I think having someone be able to guide you and okay, now is the right time to bring in more inventory would be really helpful for a lot of those brands.
I would imagine that, you know, there are a lot of mindset issues along the way, like bringing in more inventory feels like you're making progress, almost feels like because you're making more that you're like selling more, but you're really not selling more. You're just making more.
Yep.
And it's hurting you, but it feels like forward momentum. So you've gone from launch to outrageous success your first year by leveraging your referral network. What are some of the stages that you've gone through these last couple of years as far as your personal growth as a business owner? And what are some of your own mindset challenges that you've had to overcome or deal with?
Sure. Yeah. It was earlier this year, I really wanted to figure out how to not consider work stress. Like for many years, especially in the last several years of my corporate career, that's all it meant. It was stress walking in the door every day, you know, stress being in the car on the way home. And I took that into my company. It was hard to really get rid of it. And earlier this year, I said, you know, I want to find serenity. I want to find a way to enjoy my days and not feel like I'm tied to this desk for 8 hours every single day, or I'm stuck doing something stressful. And I really worked at that, which sounds silly, but I really had to work hard.
You had to work hard on being less stressful.
Yes. I had to work hard at doing less work. But that was a game changer for me because it helped me understand that when I have downtime and when I'm not stressed being at my desk all day, I actually get a lot better ideas and I get a lot more clarity in what I want to do as I move forward in those downtimes. And so it's the creativity that comes through that that has become really important to me as a CEO. And so that was a huge shift for me. And I would say in that aspect, removing that stress from my life is a total game changer.
How did you do it?
I had to actively, you know, I'm a certified project manager, and so I'm all about calendars and timelines. I had to actively schedule downtime into my calendar and like tell myself what you're supposed to be doing right now is whatever you want to be doing. And so whether that was reading a book or doing a puzzle or going for a walk or whatever that might be, I was trying to really tap into a flow state. Like, what did I feel like doing? What felt right at the moment? And yeah, it had to be a kind of an appointment on my calendar to make it feel like I was allowed to go do that. My therapist and I are working through what that means. but it has worked, and it has definitely gotten me to a much better place.
That's great. So what's next? So next year you're launching the course and the program, which it sounds just amazing. You know, we can't wait to keep us in the loop, because once you do, we can share it with our networks that have a lot of product entrepreneurs. I belong to quite a few.
Amazing.
Yeah. So we'd love to share that. What else is next for you next year? What about you personally as a CEO? How do you feel that you want to show up differently in your business for this next new year ahead?
Yeah, it's calling to me. Money mindset is going to be a huge thing for me, I think, coming up next. I very naively said to somebody about 6 months ago, you know, I don't think I have a money mindset problem. And then kind of as I've gone through more and more of this year, just kind of discovering little bits about myself and what I think about money and earning money and my value and my self-worth and how that then portrays into the company, I think is going to be a really big journey for me. So right now I'm reading Kate Northrup's Money, a Love Story.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm loving it so far. And so this is kind of the beginning of starting to look into a lot of that. But yeah, I think that's next.
Yes, I read Kate's book, Money, a Love Story, years ago. And another one, and I actually interviewed her on the podcast, you can look for this episode, is Barbara Hewson. And Rewire for Wealth. I think money mindset is a huge frontier for many of us women entrepreneurs. And it's the most rewarding part of the journey is really embracing your stories and being willing to see them. And as the daughter of a chief financial officer, there were many money stories in my family too. So that's great. That's great that you're working on that. And if anyone wants to get in touch with you,
yes,
about your new course or working with you privately as a consultant with your agency?
Yes.
How do they do that?
Yes. If you're interested in hiring us as your team, you can definitely go to unmarkstreet.com/contact, and that's the best way to get a hold of me. However, we do have the businessofapparel.com up and running. And so we have a brand new free download going at the businessofapparel.com, and it is kind of a guide. It's a blueprint for apparel development. So what does it look like from beginning to end? And so if you're curious about what that looks like at all, you can download that for free and check it out.
Thank you so much, Rachel. It's been such a pleasure having this conversation with you. Congratulations on your success.
Thank you.
Congratulations on being a better boss to yourself and, you know, embracing fully your value in your relationship with money. That's amazing.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me, Deborah. This was great.
All right. That's it for now, my friends. Until next time, have a wonderful life after corporate. Thanks for listening, my friend. If you enjoyed this show, please head over to iTunes and subscribe and leave us a review. And be sure to hop over to the Life After Corporate Facebook group and join other growing entrepreneurs to get weekly tips on how to create more money and meaning doing work you love.